For ambitious dads caught between work and home, this is where you find your footing. Here's your host, Jeff Hittner.
Welcome to the Ambitious Dads Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Hittner. You know, after more than 200 conversations with fathers, I realized we're just not talking enough. Not about our fears, our ambitions, or how our kids are really doing, or how we're holding up in the middle of all of this. This podcast is for the dads trying to build something meaningful and be present at home. The ones caring a lot, questioning if they're doing enough, and craving honest conversations without the filters. If that's you, you're not alone. You're in the right place. Let's figure this out together. And today I have a very special guest. His name is Dion Elliott Jensen. Dion is an Australian and the author of Conscious Footsteps, which is a very unique memoir about his own transformation. He is, believe it or not, the father of five. He's got three adult kids and two just starting their journey. And I don't want to give it all away because I think part of the point of what he wrote is that we aren't defined by our biography, and we'll talk a little bit about that. So let's just jump in and welcome Dion. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. I'm excited to talk with you. So look, your book was amazing, and you begin by talking about the death of your ego. And you know, you write as someone who had this external definition of success, but still found yourself quite unmoored by it. Can you talk a little bit just about kind of that, first of all, just that big experience, so all of the listeners can kind of get a perspective of where this journey began for you, losing your job, and what that sort of unraveled for you. And then we can dive into how that made you think about love and fatherhood and all that, and success and purpose and all that good stuff.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's a very big topic. So I think fundamentally what's happened in definitely recent years, if not the last 30 or 40 years, a lot of men, but definitely women as well, have really become defined by their roles as what they do for a job. And this is really seen everywhere across the world. You only have to go and meet somebody new and the conversation quickly switches to, oh, tell me what you do, rather than tell me who you are. And a lot of those initial conversations on when we're making friends or making a new acquaintance tends to be around what that person does for a living. And then based on all of the internal bias that we hold for that particular role, we then build a mental image about that person. And it's very, very difficult for that to change. But because we're so good at doing that externally, I think we also do that internally. So we become what we do for a job. It begins to define us. And you can't blame us to some extent. I mean, we're doing that for 10, 12 hours a day, 5 days a week, in some cultures, 50 weeks a year. So when we are challenged by no longer having that identity, which I was when I was fired, you really then have the mask torn off you to have to say, well, who am I when I'm not in this role? And I have been building my career since I was in my early 20s. I followed the general trajectory that a lot of people do. You know, you finish school, you either make a decision to do tertiary study or you go into the workforce and then you climb the corporate ladder. And part of climbing the corporate ladder, people are building identities about themselves and they're really difficult to shake. So as I said, when I lost that, I was confronted with, well, I'm not that role anymore. I don't have that forced respect in some instances, and some instances earned respect because I'm no longer in that position. People don't come to me anymore because they no longer need something from me in that corporate environment. So who am I? And to be honest, I was lost, and I was lost for a very, very long time. And it took me down a wonderful journey, painful, but wonderful, on discovering who I am. And then it really allowed me to step into my authentic self because I had to uncover who I was.
So then how would you define who you are? That's why I didn't want to put it in your biography explicitly, because a lot of times when I introduce people, I talk about for sure their fatherhood, but also, you know, the other aspects of who they might be in a sentence or two. So how would you define who you are now, having gone through this journey?
Yeah, and it's always a difficult question to respond to, because my foundational belief is we're constantly growing. Yeah. And a lot of our experiences are telling us who we are, but more importantly, they're also telling us who we're not. If we're really open to what our experiences are like, they're either positive or negative, and they're shaping us in both respects. So I would always say that I'm a proud work in progress, because who I was yesterday or last week or last year or 5 years ago has shaped who I am today, but doesn't define who I am today. And I try to not make this sound corny. And the reason I say not sound corny is because I always say I'm a lover, and not lover because of the general term that all the connotations that lover has when you hear it. It's got nothing to do with sex. It's got nothing to do with relationships. What it means to me is I feel love is the only really innate emotion that we have as people, and everything else is learnt. So when I say I'm a lover, I mean, I come from a love first place. I try and put good energy out into the world, and I look for good energy to bounce back.
I love that. And talk a little bit about how that evolution of your concept of love came to be, particularly in your transformation and with your family. I imagine as you struggled through that whole process of transformation, how you saw yourself as a father changed a lot. You know, we're recording this at a time where, who knows, someone maybe listens to this 18 months from now when AI takes 2/3 of the world's jobs, and they're really going to want to know what you have to say on this. So can you talk a little bit about it?
Sure. So who I am as a father and how it's really shaped me, or how that transformation shaped me. So firstly, Jeff, I thought, you know, losing my job, it's a pretty seismic change to go through. But I thought I might as well double down and just get all the change out of the way all at once. So I decided to inadvertently, or not deliberately, come out to my wife. And like, okay, let's just rip the Band-Aid off. But it was a huge amount of change. I was exceptionally fortunate to have her love and support through that coming out process. And as you alluded to at the start of the conversation, I have 5 kids, my 3 adult children from a previous marriage, and then 2 children from my most recent marriage. Unfortunately, my experience with the 3 adult children wasn't a really calm and pleasant one, and it left me with a lot of wounds around estrangement, and that really shaped how I view love, because I came to learn and believe and own that love is really a one-way street. And what I mean by that is a lot of the times when we love outwardly, we expect it to be reflected back to us, and we're challenged when it doesn't. Love tends to come with a lot of conditions, a lot of strings that are attached. And in fact, we find it very difficult to love if we aren't being loved back. I will love you if, or do you love me? It's a common phrase that, you know, people would say in relationships. And we really struggle when that love isn't reflected back to us. But what I learned through the relationship with my father, and also the relationship with the strange kids, but also the younger kids, was that the strongest, most pure form of love is the love that you give outward and just don't expect anything in return. And it's not even a level of expectation. It's just not need anything in return, because that love that you send out is self-fulfilling enough.
That I think really touched something with me. So I would love to go a little deeper on that. I mean,
unrequited love.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That doesn't feel good, at least in my experience. So how do you sort of reshape that beyond these words that you're using? Because that sounds very difficult to continue to give and give that love. And I think many people as fathers can relate to it in all sorts of different contexts, hopefully not in as extreme a context as you've gone through, but your insights would be amazing.
Yeah, I think in a nutshell, exceptionally difficult is the best way of how you get there. It's really hard and it's really trying. And the conclusions that I've reached only came through very intense bouts of anxiety and depression, and really needing to dig deep, and really needing to lean on my support networks around me to get myself through it. For all intents and purposes, I've lost the relationship as a father with three children, and that is absolutely gut-wrenching, like absolutely defeating. But in saying that, my love is still there for them. No matter what a father goes through, that love for their children doesn't change. No matter how the relationship broke down between ex-partners, in my instance, no matter the effect that that has on children, the children are never to blame. And through that processing of all of those emotions and thoughts, and as I said, depression and anxiety is where it led me with this. And it's not so much leading me to this point because you need a reason or an excuse for the emotion. It's that I truly do believe that it's okay to send it out with the possibility that one day they will come back. But if they don't, it's still okay because I love them.
I love that. And in terms of forgiveness, you know, that's also kind of, I think, similar to love, is we expect if we can forgive, they can forgive. So when it's a one-way street, how do you think about forgiveness? How do you, how does that set of emotions and thoughts work its way through your body?
Well, forgiveness is a bipartisan kind of relationship, if you will. I think when you come from a place of love without expectation or no expectation of return, forgiveness is innate. It's not something that you need to do in addition to or on top of. When it comes to their forgiveness back to me, I mean, I have no doubt I'm not a perfect person or was perfect during that period of my life. It's something that they have to give and experience and feel themselves. It's not an expectation I can necessarily put on them. My door will always be open. I would love to have a relationship with them, but it doesn't change how I love them. And it doesn't change the level of love or the intensity of the feeling I have for them.
How, if I'm a father listening to this and I have young kids or teenage kids where you get all sorts of messy, how am I thinking about your experiences for like how I handle, you know, irrational arguments with my teenagers or crazy temper tantrums with my toddlers? I feel like you have found an interesting place in terms of just how a perspective on these things that I think a lot of us as dads struggle with. And how would you kind of put it in terms that someone managing a situation like that would understand?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the best way to answer that would be love is the foundation. Everything else is built on top of that. It is the intent that comes behind all forms of communication that you have as a father. So when I am frustrated with the kids, when they are, you know, it can be something really innocuous, like they're just not getting ready for school in time, or it can be something that you're not eating your dinner, or what, you know, whatever it may be, all the way to a really important conversation on drugs or on driving or on relationships themselves. I think as long as that foundation is love, because as I said from the outset, it's the only true emotion that we're born with, the only true feeling, everything else is learnt. As long as that is the foundation and the intent behind all forms of your communication, you can't go wrong. When you layer morals on top of that, when you layer beliefs, and as long as they are beliefs that you carry, not beliefs that you have been taught yourself but no longer believe in, and I talk about that in the stories we are told. So belief systems are really strong, but as long as they are belief systems that you truly do stand behind, again, as long as that foundation is love, the conversation cannot go anything but right.
And when you when you lost your job and really began your transformation in every respect, right? Most of us as dads pride ourselves as being providers, which can have a broad definition if we want it to, but it starts with a pretty narrow definition. How did you view yourself as a father? And can you walk us through how that evolved as sort of your own ego evolved?
I mean, that was really tantamount to the death of my ego. I've been a provider. I had my first child when I was just turned 20. So I'd been parenting for the vast majority of my adult life. And I'd stepped into that role of provider very, very early in my life. And it felt natural. There were a few little times here and there that it carried a weight of expectation that was discomforting. But nevertheless, it was the role that I had accepted and I was willing to be in. Having that ability, particularly in my circumstance when who I was what I did, because I also wasn't being honest about my sexuality, it made that firing even worse and losing the job even worse. So when I was also not able to provide, it was like a double whammy, a bit of a double hit. Fortunately, I had the support of my wife's family that helped us financially to carry through kind of that bridging period until I could get back up on my feet. But it also enabled me to realize that my contribution as a father, and I think this is a really important point, your contribution as a father is more than just providing for your child. Mm-hmm. Providing means there's a roof over their head, but being present is a really important way of providing. You can provide in so many different ways apart from financially for your kids. And as a child, they need their father to show up in so many more ways than just being a financial provider.
And so what are those ways that you like to show up as a father?
The biggest one is time and presence. You may not have a lot of time, but what you can control is how present you are with the time that you have. If you've only got an hour a day with your kids before they either go to school or before you've got to put them down for bed, that time is sacred. They want to know about your day. You want to know about theirs. The phone is away. The distractions are away. And that time is sacred with you and your child. And I think it's unrealistic in this day and age to say spend copious amounts of time, because we do have responsibilities and obligations beyond the four walls of the home, and to keep the four walls of the home there, of course, but we can control how we turn up within those interactions and making sure that those interactions are as love-based in their foundation and as quality as possible.
And so what are some of the biggest challenges you faced when you were not working and you were trying to focus in on your role as a father?
So firstly is the lack of structure and the lack of routine. You get very used to working and living in a certain way, that once that goes awry, you're forced to reevaluate what the day looks like and how you can create structure, not only for yourself as an individual, but then also yourself as a parent and also as a partner as well. So it was important for me to restore a semblance of normality within the house. Obviously shield the kids where possible from any fear-based reaction, so they felt safe and calm in their home as well, but also making sure there was an element of continuity for them as well. And once that was prioritized, and of course working with my partner through that process too, but then also going through the change that I was going through.
And how did you share that change in terms of, you know, you talk in your book about truth telling with your family and with your kids. And mm-hmm. So how do you balance that? And we don't have to talk about it in the context of coming out, but I just mean in the context of like daddy's home all the time, right? You mentioned, you know, not to frighten them about or needlessly discuss economic situations with them, but mm-hmm. what is that balance on the changes that you go through, that most of us as dads go through, maybe not as extreme as your example, but the balance of what we tell our children and how we sort of offer up truth and the possibility that they can understand a bit more about life by seeing us transform.
Yeah, I think, well, firstly, in my circumstance, the kids were too young to say, "Dad's home a lot. There must be something wrong here." Mm-hmm. When it comes to truth telling, though, in general, I think we kind of wrap our kids up in cotton wool a bit and try and shield them for everything from everything. And that doesn't come from a place of poor intent. That just comes from actually a place of pure intent where we want them to feel safe and secure. What we also have to recognize too is that they may go through these situations in their life later on, but they will also go through similar situations that hold just as much gravity to their little minds when they're younger. And it's actually more of a teachable moment or a teachable area for them to be able to experience what adversity is like. A lot of us go through many, many years where adversity doesn't necessarily come and touch us, which is great, but there will be times when it does. And it's another essential life skill to be able to navigate through it, to be able to be taught to have faith and be steadfast in who you are as an individual, and particularly how those external factors shouldn't change who you are as a person, and to be able to take solace within that strength too. I think they're really valuable lessons that we can teach our kids as parents.
So then how do you walk through with how old are your youngest children now?
10 and 8.
Okay. And how do you talk about these challenges with them now? How do you talk about your relationship with your older kids now to them so that it's, you know, let's get a little more concrete about what that line is and how you present them with, not always protecting them, but seeing the broader picture so that they can learn about the way you defined love. They can learn about forgiveness, all those important tools in life.
Yeah. So the eldest of my two younger ones, she remembers the older kids. So we don't shy away from talking about them. She will bring them up occasionally on their birthdays or on special dates. I always mention it to her. And if she ever asks questions like, when will we see them again? I just give a very similar answer each time. I'm not too sure, but I can't wait until we do. And it's going to be a really happy time. So I don't shy away from the fact that they exist or that we want to have a relationship with them. And I give as much clarity and substance that I can. But I'm also not giving promises or galvanizing a belief that doesn't necessarily exist. When it comes to how in general day-to-day I would speak to them, my eldest just started a new school. She was she was the only student transferring from her particular school into the larger school. She was very worried about making friends. And it's about making that connection between experiences that mum and dad go through to what she's going to be going through and coaching her through those and to highlight the emotions that she's feeling, talk about when I felt those emotions, how I dealt with them, the feelings that it gave me, therefore the feelings that she could experience, and however it goes is okay.
You know, there often are too many dads that I've found ask me, is it okay to cry in front of my kids? And you're talking about sharing like some of the emotions you went through so that your daughter felt more comfortable in this new scary situation of going to a new school. Can you talk about what your thoughts are on sharing the full range of emotions as a man with your kids and what you've learned from that?
Yeah. Well, firstly, as men, I would love to reach a point where we are all extremely comfortable to feel the full gamut of emotion and be able to express that externally where we need to. I think we need to work more towards being able to share them with each other. You know, one thing I really work on with my friends is telling them that I love them, because again, love is something that the media or society has really taught us is transactional or sexual, is linked more to romantic partners than it is to platonic relationships. So love is one that no doubt you could guess by now I'm comfortable in sharing with others. When it comes to crying or any adverse emotion or bad emotion, again, I don't shy away from it, and I don't think anybody should. And men should feel comfortable to show it to their children, because again, they are going to be feeling these emotions whether we show ours or not. And it's about creating an environment where they can be recognized between a child and a father, or a parent and a father, a parent and a child, and be discussed openly, because only then nothing is stored within. And when we store our emotions within, that's when they can become suppressed and have a more detrimental effect overall to ourselves or within a relationship itself.
Was that your experience with your dad? I mean, was it an open emotional experience? Was it closed? And can you talk about how that sort of shifted the way you parent?
Yeah, unfortunately, the last time I spoke to my dad was when I was 11. So I've got a very kind of limited memory of individual interactions with him. I don't have a lot of memories to be able to draw from. I'm sorry, Jeff, on my dad.
No, but that brings actually just a wonderful other side to the conversation, which is, you know, I joke in my leadership work, there's two types of personalities, people that want to be like their parents and people that don't, as a yeah. joke, right? And so, yeah. You know, that lack of experience, tell me how that shaped the way you think about fatherhood, because we all have very different relationships with our fathers, and some of us had present fathers that were present physically and not emotionally, and others lucky enough to have both, and others, like in your situation, where they weren't present at all. And how did that shape, and how have you noticed that change, particularly since you're now on your fifth child? If you think back to when you first were a dad at 20 years old and now a dad to your youngest, how has all of that shifted based on the starting point that you came from?
Yeah. So if I just that last question first, so the biggest shift has been the ratio between provision and presence. Mm. So when I was 20, not only was I figuring myself out, but everything was... was trying to get my first job. Everything was very economically centered. So, you know, trying to afford nappies or diapers and put food on the table. And therefore, the need for presence was quite low, or the acknowledgement to be present as a father was quite low. That doesn't mean that the level of love and affection that I felt for my daughter was low at that point. It just meant the ratio was very, very much skewed. Whereas now, parenting a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old in my 40s, that ratio has swung completely, where provision isn't as important. Granted, it's a little bit easier now that I'm older. However, the need and the desire to be present is much, much larger. So that's how it's really changed. How not having a relationship with my father has really shaped how I parent. There is a chapter in the book called The Stories We Are Told. And in there, I share a little bit about the relationship with my dad. For a long time, I was told a story about him not wanting to have anything to do with me, refusing to pay child support. So it really shaped my view of the world around him. And it wasn't until I had some similar experiences where a narrative was constructed about who I was as a parent that was untrue, that I realized perhaps my perception of him was unfair and skewed. So that didn't necessarily shape who I was as a father. It definitely shaped that view of one-way love. But what it really reinforced for me is to ensure that the relationship that the father has with a child is exceptionally important. And it's one that needs to be really prioritized. And I, for one, have always wanted to be a present dad and have a lasting effect, a lasting positive effect as a parent for all of the kids to be able to look back and say, you know, dad was there for me and had my back.
Thank you for sharing that. There must have been a lot of fear in your journey, and a lot of the dads that I speak with, you know, one of their biggest challenges is the fear that comes up with the fear that comes up as they try to navigate, right? Either the balance between who they are and what they desire to do at work and who they are and what they desire to be at home, or these bigger obstacles and challenges like the loss of a job. Can you talk a little bit about how you experience fear and how you maybe used it as a way to grow and change and to become the father that you are now?
So I think kind of fear wears many, many guises. As it can be fear of failure, fear of not being good enough, you know, fear of lack. There's so many different fears out there. And I'm proud to say I've experienced all of them. But I spoke a little bit before around anxiety and depression. And I really wanted to understand what fear was doing to me and why fear had such a strong grasp on me. And I wrote a quote at the start of the book that kind of really synthesizes to me what fear is. So for me, fear is projecting a memory, which has happened in the past, and then applying it to something that we think may happen in the future. So, and it takes us away from living in the present moment. And to make that a little bit more real, I used to say they're like concrete boots. You just get stuck in one spot. You can't move forward. You can't move backwards. You can't move right. And you can't move left. And you end up just going nowhere. And all that happens is the clock and the calendar pages keep going. And nothing's really happened. And I think we project a lot of those fears as dads onto our kids or onto our relationships. But the biggest one is our history books. Our history books as kids and as adolescents and as young adults before we become fathers, or for experiences that we've had previously, they get projected onto our futures and their fears that we really carry through. So the way that I would best say that dads should deal with fear is say, is this a fear that is protecting me or limiting me? And by using that analysis, you know if that fear is there to serve you or to hold you back.
Do you use that same language with your children to talk about fear?
Mm-hmm.
And do they repeat that? And like for when your daughter, when she was going to school, how did that?
Oh God, no. I get an eye roll. Like, oh, here we go again.
Yeah, that sounds
which only means it's sinking in, right?
Yeah. Of course. It's a very beautiful way to think about fear. And what are the fears that you have right now as a dad? Like, what are the things that are keeping you up at night? In both contexts, I mean, you have such a broad experience as a father, both with your adult children that you are not able to see, and then your two youngest. So what are the fears that keep you up at night and around being a dad at this moment?
I've got kind of an underlying, a general fear of the future for them. I think we live in a really tumultuous time. My biggest goal for the kids is that they can find and understand what their purpose is and live a rich life that's purposeful and purpose-based. My biggest fear, though, around that, though, Jeff, is that a society may not allow them to or may not enable them to. and that they will get caught on the treadmill and not be able to get off and live a life that's unfulfilled. So that would be my biggest fear for them.
And how do you parent to prevent that from coming true?
So now that my oldest is starting to think what happens, you know, after school, she's starting to get a bit older now. I spend a lot of time talking around what are you passionate about? What brings you joy? Talking openly about the fact that you do work for a long period of your life, and that I want her to do something that she loves and that that sparks joy within her. So I don't shy away from it. It'd be very difficult to say, let's have a big reset in the world. That's not really going to happen. It's not necessarily practical. So I try to talk about within the constraints and confines of still needing to put a roof over your head, all of those things. How can you find your purpose and live your purpose?
And is there a way that you use these words with your youngest?
With her, it's what makes you happy, joy, and what gives you a warm feeling. So that loving feeling.
Yeah. And when they ask you, do they ever ask you, or how do you describe what daddy does for a living?
They do ask. They just think daddy works on businesses. But they recognize that I don't go to an office every day. They know that daddy's his own boss. So they definitely see some distinction there. And whenever they do mention one of those distinctions, I talk about that I am fortunate to be doing this and that it does bring me a lot of joy.
Fortunate's an interesting word there because it took a lot of effort to do what you do, right? Maybe there's some circumstance, but you know, I'm obviously an entrepreneur as well, and I'm not going to say it was luck that brought me to be able to work from home with my family. So, do you talk about like the ability to design like their own life in that way?
Yeah, and that's part of the fortunate aspect, and I link that to you may not get the particularly in corporate roles, so they may not see the stature that gets aligned with being a CEO or CFO or anything like that. The general definitions of success I talk about, but success and how it can come in many ways. Bearing in mind my trajectory and what I believed I was that corporate person, and I was chasing those titles. So when I talk about being fortunate, I'm more reflecting on the fact that I'm fortunately not on that trajectory anymore. And fortune isn't necessarily linked to a monetary outcome. It can be a time-based or a lifestyle outcome too.
That makes a lot of sense. And so maybe even with your older children that you unfortunately aren't able to connect with at the moment, what do you hope they one day understand about like the versions of you that were driven by fear and ego and shame or even survival?
What do I hope? I hope that they can see that inevitably I got to a place of love. And if they, for me as an individual, it was worth it in the end. So that's what I hope they can see. Yeah. And that perhaps my journey is something that they can take solace in or take guidance from for themselves. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. Do you, if you could give sort of one piece of advice to folks around how to open themselves up to love being only in one direction, as you described, what would that be? Like, how do we take that first step?
You take the first step. So grounding the principles of love, I think firstly comes from challenging. The first step I would say would be to challenge your definition of what love is and to step away from the conventional understanding of love needing to be transactional, for you needing to receive something in return for providing your love. They would be the first steps that were challenging your understanding. Then I would say, how do you feel when you're in your most comfortable state and you've got that feeling in your chest? Because it's about reshaping what your definition is of love. I really do feel the first thing is though to challenge the current definitions of it, because we get so caught up in what that word means and what we've been taught it to mean. Because it's not transactional, it's not a call to perform, it's none of those things. It's just that beautiful, warm, natural feeling. And then once you have challenged that sufficiently, it's about how can you express it in different ways in your life. So that might be something as simple as holding the door open for someone, not expecting a thank you. Letting somebody in traffic, not expecting a wave back, but you just did it because you did it. It's about showing those smaller gestures. And then once they build up to be a habit, if you will, realizing that it can exist in all parts of your life.
I feel like this is a wonderful practice as I think about my children aging into teenager dumb, right? Where in many respects, it will be a one directional expression for a while. But it also makes me think it's such an interesting thing to challenge. I mean, there are so many definitions I've challenged in my own life, particularly around success and meaning, but love, was the one that for me, I think I had to challenge by kicking and screaming, so to speak. So I really love how you've framed that and this idea that it can really just go in one direction. So I just want to thank you so much for sharing so vulnerably kind of where you are in your life. I really hope, as I'm sure most of our listeners do, that you do have a chance to re-engage with your oldest kids. It sounds like you're a wonderful dad to your two youngest. Is there anything else you want to share or that I should have asked over the course of this conversation?
No, I've loved it. It's been fun. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. And I hope we get to talk again soon.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Ambitious Dads Podcast. If you enjoyed this conversation and want more insights on balancing ambition and fatherhood, make sure to hit that like button, subscribe to the channel, and turn on the notification bell so you never miss an upcoming episode. Check out the links in the description for our newsletter and more resources to help you live intentionally as a dad. See you in the next episode.